Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the top sales for comics for February 2019 through Diamond to retailers. We've got the top 500 again. We usually talk about the top 300 when we do kind of month-to-month comparisons. We've got an apples-to-apples comparison going back all the way to February 2003, actually. So quite a bit of history there. Joining me, we've got Sam. How you doing tonight, Sam?
Good. How are you, John?
I'm doing all right. And we also have Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing fabulous.
Good, good. We've been getting a lot of really good feedback with you on these episodes. I think it brings a fun dynamic, getting a retailer perspective on this stuff.
No, so, I appreciate that. I'm glad that you guys enjoy it. And for anyone who's also listened to Kyle and Drew, I'm sorry. I have a tendency to make episodes last an hour longer.
Well, you got good things to say. I think it's all good.
To be fair,
or at least I have things to say. They may not be good, depending on who fair, you are and what view you take.
To be fair, Eric, a lot of that blame is on me. These episodes doubled when I started co-hosting, so that's mostly me.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll let you take the blame for it.
Hey, it works either way. We're having a good discussion. I'm happy. If we look at the breakdown of the top 300 comics this month, unsurprisingly, Marvel had the lion's share of it, as it almost always does. This time with 46.51% of the units. DC had almost a third of the pie with 33.22% of the units for the top 300, followed by Image with 8.94%. And then, man, it's a pretty big drop off there to Dark Horse with 2.25%, Dynamite with 2.13%, Boom Studios with 2.12%, IDW with 2.2% of the total units for the top 300. Now, you add those premier publishers together, and man, you're talking about 97.28% of the top 300 sales. Now, we've got another bunch of publishers showing up here in the top 300. We've got, another dozen of them. Valiant, Archie, Titan, Aftershock, Oni, Zenoscope, Coffin, Abstract, Antarctic, Tokyo Pop, Papercuts, and Action Lab. But really, in most of these cases, they've got one or a handful of things coming out. And they've got, you know, a fraction of a percentage of the total sales for the top 300. I think if I were to do these stats for the top 500, since we've got that going back a little ways now, obviously it would help out some of these other publishers. We also start getting a lot more reorder activity in that area. So, if we look at it by dollars, it really doesn't change a whole lot this time, because Marvel has 46.87% of the total retail dollars for the top 300. DC, 33.23%. Image, 8.65%. So really, we're just talking a little bit of noise there in terms of the units and dollars and stuff. Sometimes we see a little bit more swing there if we've got some more higher-priced items or something like that, but really not that much of a difference these days, as everything is kind of gravitating more towards that $3.99 price point.
Yeah, looking at more granular data once we actually get to the list, Marvel now, since DC has abandoned $2.99, has a slightly higher, DC has a slightly higher average price point, but that is almost entirely due to the $1 reprints Marvel does that DC does not do.
Well, and DC had a $9.99 item, whereas the top price over at Marvel this month was
$7.99. Yeah, yeah, they have comparable numbers of $4 and $5.99 books, but yeah, it's the big difference in the above and below $4.99 average is those $1 reprints that DC simply doesn't do.
Absolutely. I think they, and I've said it before, they're leaving money on the table by not doing that kind of stuff. You know, you look, in this case, when I did kind of the breakdown of that non-series stuff on the list, it was just so heavy on Marvel, it wasn't even funny. Matter of fact, it was almost exclusively Marvel with, I think, a few things from IDW, like My Little Pony 2020, Star Trek 2020, and TMNT 2020. And then I think DC had last month that Mysteries of Love and Space. Everything else was either Star Wars Age of the Republic this month, some Captain Marvel True Believer stuff, or a couple of other kind of one-shots or whatever. Whereas last month on the Marvel side, it was, again, the True Believers Conan stuff and some other, you know, non-series type stuff, an annual or two, and some other Age of the Republic stuff. I mean, Marvel is doing a lot more in this area than really anybody else. Almost everybody else put together, it seems like, at times. But I go back to that True Believers line of reprint stuff is essentially found money for them. They're doing a good job, I think, theming it and having the timeliness of those themes, and it's working for them.
Yeah, and we're starting to see Marvel actually go a little bit beyond just the True Believers and doing facsimile editions. Just recently, they did the Hulk 181, First Appearance of Wolverine, which is a $3.99, but it was a total reprint of the issue. So they're kind of looking at, I think they're starting to say, well, people are going after these. You know, they did the Amazing Fantasy 15 as a $1 True Believer. They've done Amazing Spider-Man number 1. They've done ASM 300. So they're looking at what's going on and saying, okay, people are buying, you know, large volumes of these $1 books for key issues that generally go for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now they're starting to take some of those and turn them into $3.99 books. And I have to respect them for that for two reasons. One, they know when there's a premium item out there that they can go ahead and price it at a premium amount, but they also are presenting it in a premium way. So the 181 reprints actually had a thicker stock cover, whereas most of the Marvel books have a very thin paper cover stock. Same thing with the True Believers has the thin stock. So even though they charge the standard going price, they did increase the quality, and they're still maintaining doing the $1 reprints for the other issues that maybe aren't high dollar keys, but they're pivotal points in a storyline, starting something, changing something, a status quo adjustment, whatever. So as long as the $3.99 facsimiles don't become kind of the norm and they stay more as like a prestige format reprint for a very specific high dollar book, I fully support it, because not only does it make me more money, it also is just a nicer product for you know, end customers to have. So that's one shift that they're doing, but so far I think it's actually a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and I think it's also a very interesting way to almost build up a little bit of the back issue market again by getting people to dip their toes in the water on that kind of a thing and say, these older comics are interesting. Maybe it's worth actually getting the original version of them.
Yeah, and there's also people who are unwilling to start investing in a run of comics in back issue form if they know they're not ever going to be able to afford kind of that quote-unquote grail comic, and they're not going to leave a hole and just, you know, say, well, it's contained in this trade that fits right in between these issues. So it does open that back issue market up quite nicely.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we move on, Eric, and I realize for various reasons this is a sore subject, but how do you think either Marvel or DC doing something similar to basically the $5 or $6 100-page giants they were doing as reprints, as opposed to these $1 or facsimile editions, would go over?
I think it's a tricky one to kind of hit on the head, because if you're putting sequential issues in place, the trades are already there, so then you kind of have this, just print it in a trade and make the trade more affordable instead of $24.99 kind of thing. If you're doing scattershot issues, those just have such a weird sales trajectory, because you can't really ever plan on who's going to want what. So for me, I guess personally, I'm kind of more of a fan of just do it the way they're doing it. And if DC were to do something similar, start some sort of program like that, I think that would be more beneficial than the 80-page or 100-page giants. I have had some customers come in and talk about the Walmart books and say like they're liking the news stories, but some of the content that's been included from, you know, back issues, they're kind of confused as to how it got put in there or why. There's obviously some logical threads holding it all together, but for them, they're just not seeing it, because it kind of jumps eras. It may even jump characters. And so it's one of those things where for them, they're kind of like, I don't get it. So it's either, how do you satisfy that? How do you not trip over your own trade sales? It's kind of a tricky thing. So I personally like the $1 True Believer and the facsimile editions myself, but other retailers may feel otherwise. They may like those 80-page giants as places for people to dip their toes.
Well, but your answer makes a lot of sense. And now that I hear that, I tend to agree with you.
Are you seeing people going from the True Believers and then picking up the trades that those are essentially almost teasers for?
Not as much, and I think part of that is because our store does focus on back issues a lot. We tend to see people take the True Believers and then go into the back issue bins. There are times, though, where it will get people kind of thinking about things. So they did the Infinity Gauntlet number one, obviously, with the Avengers Infinity War. It was one of those things where people could kind of connect a lot of threads. And we did sell a lot of that Infinity Gauntlet trade. But more often than not, we see one of two things. We see people that are getting these books that they otherwise wouldn't be able to afford, and being just very happy owning that copy, or maybe two, one that they keep nice and the other one they keep rereading, or that launch pad into the back issues where they're kind of like, well, I got this one for now. I'll get the other three that go in the four issue set or whatever. And then maybe someday I'll be able to afford getting a rough copy of the real book.
Right, right, right. But it seems to be sparking interest in that older material, which I think is a good thing.
Absolutely. And I will say, too, part of the struggle for us is we want to balance the amount of those we bring in with the other new product. Because if you're going to put, you know, 25 books on the stand in a given week and three or four of them are $1 books, you know, from Marvel, people, what are they going to do? They're going to spend $1? Are they going to spend $4? So we tend to not order super heavy or super deep on a lot of them, like ASM 300, Amazing Fantasy 15. Those we know there's no way of getting around it. You just got to order them and whatever, take your lumps. It's not a big deal. But it does put retailers in a position where you can sell 200 of those $1 books. But if your margin is, you know, 50 cents, what would you rather sell? Would you rather sell 200 books and make 50 cents a book? Or would you rather sell 50 books and make $2 a book? You know, you kind of have a couple of different ways to go about it. So it does make being a retailer a little bit more, I don't want to say challenging. You just have to think about it and be aware of what you're doing.
Yeah, I could definitely see the risk of if you had too many of those $1 books out there, somebody who's new to comics would come in, think that's the regular price, and wonder why everything else is so expensive.
Yeah, usually the nice thing, though, is just having True Believers across the top. People are usually pretty aware of it's a reprint. It's not an actual back issue kind of thing.
That's good to hear. I had a coworker at one point who was confused by the Ultimate Comics line being set in a different continuity than the regular Marvel stuff. And I'm like, it's got a clear trade dress that kind of sets it apart. But again, I knew what I was looking at.
Right.
So anything else on the breakdown, or shall we move into the top comics list itself?
Go ahead and move on unless Eric's got something.
Well, the only thing that I would say, I guess, for me is I think Image had a little bit of a rebound as far as titles. I think they were on the positive for the Delta for the month. But, you know, anytime I see Image Comics under 10%, it does kind of hurt a little bit. And I think a lot of it just goes back to the discussions we've had before about so many similar vein books coming out, spreading so wide and not being able to go as deep and having short-running titles all make for a little bit more of a struggle for us to bring in those.
Yeah, I think with Image, that short-running title aspect is a bit of a major problem in some cases, because I was reading, I think it was Freeze, and really enjoying it, and then I hit issue 4, and I'm like, yep, this is where we're going to pause for a while, maybe even stop or whatever. Kind of a, we hope to come back for more, and I'm like, you're leaving the story here? What's going on?
Right, right. And I think this is where something like Lazarus and Astro City, kind of the experiments they're running, could be enough to actually kind of get over the hump. Knowing some creators that we know, the cost of getting in by, you know, paying to have that Image eye put on your book, and then on top of it, you know, paying for the printing costs out of everything that you're selling, and having kind of the, usually the way, sorry, let's back up a little bit. When you go through Image, you have two options of how you publish your book. You can either pay up front for the printing, or what happens most of the time for a lot of the creators who don't have a huge, you know, pocketbook to go for it, what they'll do is Image will float them the money to print the books. And then as the books sell to retailers, the publisher will give a credit against the account to whoever, you know, paid for or ordered the books. So in the case of the creator that we know, he put out 10 issues in single issue form through Image. He went the route of, you know, Image float me the money for the printing. As the sales come through, go ahead and credit my account and get me back to balance. And it took him almost 3 years, and going 1.5 trades beyond where he was in single issues before he actually balanced out. So it took 3 years for him to get back to zero, essentially. And I think the Lazarus and the Astro City approach of, you know, getting maybe 2 to 3 issues of content out quarterly might set up creators for a better path of success for monetary reasons. So if you're printing it once, you're going to have a page count, yes, but you don't have to worry about cover plates. You don't have to worry about the gluing again or the stapling again. It's all happening one time, right? And every time you do that, you remove a little bit of the cost. And so I'm wondering if this is a model that can actually succeed and allow creators to get to zero quicker if they are having Image float them the money for the printing costs, or their out-of-pocket costs that they're paying for is low enough that it keeps them in the game to keep creating. Obviously, with Rucka and Busick, those are two guys who have a little bit more in the catalog that can afford probably just to pay up front, but it's an interesting model, and I really hope that other people try it out and see how it works.
Well, and I think cutting the cost of the covers and the image eye cost of the 2,500 and stuff by a third over the course of a quarter by doing, or actually two-thirds, by going one issue that's oversized versus the three monthly definitely changes the math quite a bit, and hopefully in the creator's favor.
Right.
Now, Astro City, of course, is over at DC, so it doesn't have the image eye. I think for there, it's just a matter maybe of having a bit more storytelling room.
Correct.
And certainly with that first issue of Lazarus Risen, they used the extra pages to good effect, and I think it worked well for them.
Yeah, and you know, one book that I've kind of been thinking about that might benefit from something like this, and I don't mean to, if anybody's going to be offended by this, I'm sorry, but I wonder if Usagi Yojimbo might be the kind of title that has a very strong niche crowd, but you put a little bit more content, and Stan usually does like 4-issue arcs, right? They generally are in the 4-issue range.
I don't know. They stand alone fairly well. There are some that are done in one, some that are a couple issues. I don't consider it having a standard length, but honestly, I've never really thought about it that much.
Okay, because I thought the last couple of runs that he's had have been about 4 issues in their little, and maybe yeah, standalone issue is a good way of saying it, but I think he's kind of doing like these little, you know, 4-issue batches that all are standalone in the same era or setting, but that's a book that I wonder if it might actually benefit it, because you've got, again, that smaller niche audience, but if you pack a little bit more in, I want to say the Lazarus was $7.99 or something like that. If you pack, you know, 2 to 3 times the content in a volume for something like that at that lower price, now all of a sudden you're starting to compete, not quite, but you're starting to compete a little bit with manga.
Yeah.
And that's where the Usagi might start to cross over and get enough people to kind of look at it and go, well, maybe I'm going to give that a try. So that's a title. I kind of think about things like that, and that's one of those titles that maybe it would work.
It would be interesting for them to do it there, because I think if Stan were to do that longer short of a story, they would almost feel more kind of half-hour cartoon length, if you will.
Right.
And I think it's a property that would do wonderful in that kind of, you know, adapted format, because it's a brilliant comic.
Right, and now that he's at IDW with Turtles, maybe that would be a way, like having Usagi Turtles kind of quarterly, you know, 2 or 3 issues in one kind of volume, because I think that was part of the allure for Stan to go over to IDW, was some of that rehashing coming back with the Turtles, where the, you know, the Usagi action figure came out with TMNT, and they've had crossovers in the past, so maybe that's kind of an idea, but I don't know. What do I know? I just sell the books.
Here's a dumb question. Once you go to that model, particularly for, like you were talking about with Usagi, at that point, aren't you just leaving money on the table instead of going to a $9.99 prestige format, basically trade?
I don't think so, personally. I think you're actually opening yourself up to more. And the reason I say that is because $7.99, $9.99, yeah, there's a little bit of a difference. But we've seen a number of creators who have started with the $9.99 trades at Image, and their subsequent volumes, but even their subsequent titles that they've done have not been $9.99 trades for volume one, because it takes a lot of the money out of it. Whereas the $7.99 with, you know, 3 issues, I think it's just that sweet spot where people are willing to shell out a couple extra dollars to get 3 times the content. And if you wanted to, you could package up, you know, maybe if you do a quarterly release, that's say 3 issues per release, you could then do twice a year if you wanted, you could do a trade that contains 6 issues, so 2 of the quarterlies. And then if you wanted to, you could do annually, you could do a hardcover that has, you know, all 12 issues put into it.
I don't disagree with any of that. I guess my question is, basically, you're talking about books the size of like The Last League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was, correct?
Kind of 64 pages-ish, depending, but yeah.
Kind of the 64 to 80 page range, yeah.
I don't know. At that point, it would be interesting to see, could you push it to $8 or $9, particularly if it's only quarterly?
I think you're better off keeping it at the $7.99 price point, because at that point it feels like for the equivalent of two comics, you're getting three.
Right.
Whereas when you get to the $8.99, $9.99, it's, well, you're not getting any kind of a price break, and it's close enough to that $10 and stuff. It's like, yeah, it feels like a much more expensive book, even though it's only a buck or two different sometimes.
Yeah, but even at $9.99, it's still $2 cheaper for three than $12 that would normally be as individuals.
I think ultimately, too, what it comes down to is it's the content. And when we're talking about products, you know, obviously Lazarus, very well-known and very well-respected run. Same thing with Astro City. Same thing with Usagi. Regardless of if it's $7.99 or $9.99, I think the only way that these work in my mind, at least right now, is that the content has to be there to actually back it up. You couldn't just throw, I don't even really want to just pick a random book because I would feel bad, but you couldn't just throw anything in this kind of idea and see if it works. I think it has to be known quantities, known creators, and in this case, I think it's a good testing ground with known properties that you can actually try it out on.
I actually agree with you. Yes. Some random new Image number one couldn't.
Right. Especially if it's by a new creator. They may be an amazing writer or an amazing artist or an amazing duo, but completely unknown people with completely unknown story premise could be very hard to sell.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, that's where the barrier to entry of that price point and stuff, the more unknown or the more risky somebody feels it is, the less likely they're going to go for that higher price point. Whereas more often at a lower price point, I can get one of them and sample it.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, too, what we're talking about is a slightly different version of something like a Shonen Jump, right? Where Shonen has multiple stories in it, which actually, if you kind of go to that manga model, it's kind of a fascinating little case study in how everything's rated, and that's how you stay in the top tier publications or drop down to the lower level. But kind of that whole idea of many stories, one volume, it's a higher return for your investment.
Yeah. Well, and I think the manga methodology of getting that feedback, and it determines, do you stay in that upper tier or lower, go to the lower tier kind of book or publication, there's a lot to be said for that, because
right,
you're
exactly
getting actual grades from your readers and stuff on things, whereas I think Marvel, DC, and the other publishers are just going, well, it sells, it must be good.
Yeah, or it's an important character, so therefore we must put stories out about it, or with him, her, him, she, he, whatever.
Yeah. Well, if we look...
Sorry for that detour. We can go to the list now.
No, I was going to say, that's fine. It's good discussion. If we look at the list, though, that top item, Batman Who Laughs, number 3, only item over 100,000 this month, 101,771 units. That's off about 13.71% from the previous issue, which was at 117,944 units. But still, top of the list, it is, like I said, the only thing over 100,000, and there's only one other thing over 90,000, and that was Batman number 64, which is at 93,400. And then its following issue 65 of Batman was below 90,000 a little bit at 89,123 units. So a little bit of stuff going on there.
So if we could, can we talk about Batman Who Laughs just a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, so this issue sold 101,771, down about, I think, 16,173, if I'm reading everything correct.
Mm-hmm.
However, John, just out of curiosity, and remind me how this works, does that 16,000, is that off of the total from last month plus the reorder for number 2 that is 8,132, or does that just go from last month's list to this month, not counting that reorder?
It includes the reorder. It's comparing the sales of this issue to the known sales of the previous issue.
Okay, so I'm going to say that by issue 5, we should know for sure if this is going to sustain over 100,000. I think next one's going to really be the litmus test. There's a lot of discussion about Batman Who Laughs from retailers in our closed Facebook groups and things like that. There's a lot of demand for Batman Who Laughs, but they're out of print. So I believe DC either has or will be going back to print with specifically the first issue. And I think they're going to come with the second one as well. But this is that Snyder-Capullo team up again. And I think, to me, this is an indication of people are starting to get a little tired of the main Batman storyline. And there needs to be, I guess we need to ask the question of why are people tiring of it versus what Snyder and Capullo are doing. Now, yes, it's a new character. He's got a good look to him. He's got a lot of excitement. But these guys sustained, what, 52 issues over 100,000, and now they're on another Batman title, and it's surpassing the main Batman title. Someone's got to ask questions.
Yeah, we talked about this last month, actually. And, yeah, I think John said, oh, 117,000, that's nowhere near sustainable. And that was my exact comment, is for those of us that have quit reading the main Batman title, this has become the Batman title I buy, and I don't think I'm the only person in that situation.
Right, or at the very least, I think people are looking at it and saying, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are the Batman creators that I want to read.
Yeah,
I would agree with that, too. It's interesting, though, because if you look at the three issues of Batman Who Laughs so far, the second and third really have yet to total up to the sales of that first one.
Yes.
So there's been a fairly hefty drop-off, but even so, it's still doing, obviously, well better than the regular Batman title. But I don't think my assessment of it's not sustainable is too far off, because it did lose a fair amount.
No, it did. Because you might know this, Eric. John, I think last month suggested we thought this might have been a miniseries. Do you know, is this supposedly ongoing, or was this only 5 or 6 issues to begin with?
6 issues to begin with.
Okay, so it is, yeah, so I mean, potentially it's only a miniseries, and if 5 and 6 get little bumps, which sometimes happen with miniseries, next month, 4 could be the only one that slips below 100,000.
I'm also going to say this, though. DC's not, you know, inept at looking at numbers, and if the numbers are there, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw either Batman Who Laughs go to an ongoing, or if they did another mini, and they just kind of keep running these minis. But I think the biggest thing is it's going to depend on the creators. I think people want a little bit more faster pace. They want a little bit more action going on in their stories, and not to say that Tom doesn't have action going on in his Batman run, but I think people just view what Scott's doing as a little bit more exciting. And so it'll be interesting to see, do they extend it beyond the 6 or not? And I do want to go back really quick. All three, numbers 1, 2, and 3 of Batman Who Laughs have been resolicited for a quote-unquote final printing.
Here's the other dumb question. If they go to this kind of series of miniseries, of all those other Batman, and there's a couple more, do you think it has to be this one, or do you think Capullo and Snyder, they could rotate through them? What are there? There's 6 or 7 of them, right?
There's like 7 of them. It's an entire Justice League's worth.
I think that would actually be really cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually kind of would hope for that.
Right, and that could be the plan, and I think if they did that, not only is that a brilliant plan on single issues, but as far as collected editions and an omnibus, I think that that's all really strong sales potential.
Yeah, from the collected edition point of view particularly, I see it, because then you could eventually build up to a box set of, you know, Dark Knight's Metal and the Batman's, you know, afterwards.
Right.
That being said, as someone who's just actually still reading the Dark Knight's Metal trades, I was reading a couple issues this afternoon, I hated the way they broke those apart.
Can you explain a little bit more what you mean?
So there's 3 of them. There's the Road to...
Oh, yeah, Forge and Casting?
It has the Forge, Casting, yeah, a couple of issues from Final Crisis from a few years ago, an issue from that Batman Returns thing where he was lost in time. It's weird. It's got the Forge, Casting, but the trade itself has got like 8 issues in it. The other stuff being really older material. And then you've got the main miniseries, supposedly is the 2nd book in the trade collection. And then the 3rd one is all the one-shots. And I would love to see a printing that had a more logical reading order than kind of in those 3 chunks. Maybe that's just me.
I think that might just solely be based on publication date. Obviously not the back issues, but... I'm just trying to look right now, so...
Well, here's the thing. I believe all 3 trades came out the same week, or if not, they came out like bam, 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 weeks 1, 2, 3 right in a row. The thing is, the 3rd one was published and arguably has the reading order. The 3rd trade belongs in the middle of the 2nd trade.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of why they did it the way they did, is they were doing it kind of on a title-by-title basis, not in a reading order across titles basis.
Yeah.
I mean, I get where you're coming from, and I don't disagree with you in terms of put it in a logical reading order, but I think this is pretty common on how they do the reprints when they particularly have these side one-shots or mini-series that tie into something else.
I also think they could have made it a little larger books and made it two, because that prelude book as a trade, I think is $35. And it's basically two issues, Casting and Forge, with a lot of kind of ancillary weird reprints from, you know, 5 to 10 years ago.
All right. I'm trying to figure out. So I'm looking at.
Let me grab it. I've got the trade sitting right here. The one I was reading today. Let me.
Okay.
Yeah, as I say, I found the three trades that are Dark Knights Metal, okay, The Resistance, and Rising, and I'm missing the other one. So I think there's four trades.
Oh, then I'm missing one, which is also possible.
I've got none of the trades, but I've got all the original issues, so I'm okay.
Let me flip to the beginning of this. So the book I am looking at is The Road to Metal, Dark Days.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It has The Forge, The Casting, How to Murder the Earth, New Heaven, New Earth, which is Final Crisis 6 and 7.
Yep.
The Return of Bruce Wayne, which is The Return of Bruce Wayne number 1. Batman Endgame Parts 4 and 5, which is Batman
38 and 9.
Yeah. Nightwing Must Die Part 2, which is Nightwing 17. The Big Picture, which is Detective Comics 950. And the Multiversity Guidebook number 1.
All right, yes. There are four trades. That's the leadoff.
Yeah, okay.
Then it goes to Dark Knights Metal, which contains Dark Knights Metal 1 through 6.
I'm missing. Oh, I didn't even see it. Okay, The Resistance I somehow missed. I got it sitting here and I just, for some reason, forgot it.
Yep, that's the one that has all the little crossovers, the Teen Titans 12, which is the first appearance of our Batman Who Laughs, and Nightwing 29, Suicide Squad, da-da-da-da-da. So yeah, there's four trades in that one. Whew. All right. I was like, I'm missing a book somewhere, but got her all figured out now.
Yep. Sorry.
That's how you know one of these stories is spilled out into too many titles, when it's like you can't even remember how many trades collects it all.
Well, like I said, the first trade, which is the one I'm in the middle of reading, it's 40 great pages at the beginning, and then a bunch of reprints from 5 to 10 years ago for $35 seems a little ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think for you and for John and for, you know, a good amount of people
that have read all those and own them all.
Right. But for a lot of new people, a lot of people that jumped on New 52 Batman or might be coming into it, it's some of that's almost necessary reading. Otherwise, they're going to be completely lost.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think if you had never seen the Multiversity Guidebook, for instance, and you got to that part of the Dark Knight's Metal stuff where they're looking at that map or whatever, you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
Now, you would argue a good accessible story, you could look at it and say, oh, I get what this is at a high level. So, which I think you could, but anyways. Now, one thing I want to point out about those two Batman issues is that was what was originally solicited as The Last Cold Case, but what came out as The Price, it's the same story, just different title. It was the crossover with The Flash.
Right.
That, in theory, was moving forward the meta arc, but frankly didn't really seem to be. Again, maybe I read a little more into that based on the Button storyline that actually did move forward the arc for Rebirth a little bit. And this was more tying into the Heroes in Crisis stuff. But even with that kind of a crossover story interjected into the ongoing Batman story that paused for the two issues, these things still didn't do brilliantly. I mean, compared to how Batman has done over the last, you know, 5-10 years-ish.
Yeah, there's little to no buzz about this crossover at all. I think you mix in a lukewarm reception to Heroes in Crisis, a waning fandom for the Batman title right now, and the fact that Doomsday Clock was just delayed another 8 weeks, I think you've kind of just got a perfect recipe for no one really caring.
Yeah, I've been following some of the delays on Doomsday Clock, and just every week it's yet another week delayed, it seems like.
Yep.
Just insane. Well, and if we jump just a little, and we'll get back to the one in between, but to rank number 5, we've got Heroes in Crisis number 6 there, just over 79,000 with 79,006 units. And this is, in theory, one of their big quasi-event books or whatever right now, and I'm still getting it just out of the train wreck aspect of it. This is not the kind of story I think they ought to be telling, and I don't care for how they're telling it. So I'm really curious if it's going to somehow magically land the ending and be worthwhile. And I'm increasingly thinking, for me, that's highly unlikely. It's, again, one of the better selling DC books, but these days, frankly, that doesn't take a whole lot. Because really, by the time we're, well, before we even get out of the top 25, we're below 50,000 units this month. And this was the eighth lowest sales month for the top 300 in the pre-order era, or the final order era, started in February 2003.
And it's February is always a down month, right? And on top of that, you've got DC that kind of held off the last batch of books for the last week of the year and pushed them into January. So you're kind of coming down off of that a little bit too. Yeah, I mean, it was a slower month just as far as I think titles goes too. We just from putting books out on the table and pulling them for subscribers, it didn't feel like we had the volume of books that we normally do.
Yeah. Yeah. This again was, I mean, this month was down, I think, like a million units compared to last month. And again, it was, like I said, the eighth worst, you know, total for the top 300. And probably, actually, it was, I think, the worst one since May 2011. So it's been a while since we've had sales that were this kind of low for the top 300. And again, a lot of it is, you know, we've had other months where we've got a lot stronger top of the list than we've got right here.
Right.
You know?
A lot of that's the missing Marvel number ones.
Just wait. War of the Realms is coming, Sam.
And to be fair, there's Wolverine Infinity Watch number one. There's Daredevil number one. There's Avengers No Road Home. But none of those... Well, No Road Home cracked the top 10. The other two are in the top 20, but not the top... You know, we didn't have two or three of those Marvel number ones in the top five, like... You know, between 80 and 150,000.
I don't think it was necessarily for a lack of trying. We've got Old Man Quill. We've got Hulk Farine's number one. I mean, we do have a fair number of number ones for Marvel. They just didn't hit it big this time.
Well, they also didn't have a lot of variants on them.
And not only did they not hit it big, look at this list of number ones. None of these are... There's not an Iron Man, a Cap. There's Wolverine-esque books. There's an Avenger-esque book. I mean, the biggest single kind of legacy character single title on here is Daredevil.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, most of the number ones we have actually are those True Believers or Star Wars Age of the Republic stuff or Age of X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
So there were fewer of them. They weren't as heavily promoted, but I'm not going to say that's inherently a bad thing. I think Marvel goes to the number one well far too often.
I agree with that, but... When you look for what happened this month that's different from the last few months, I think that's a big part of it.
True, true. The question is, chicken or the egg, did they do that because it's a February, which is usually not a strong month, or was February not a strong month because they didn't do it, sort of, you know, and I think it's both sides are true.
Yeah.
But, I mean, by the time we get to rank, you know, 7 or whatever, we're under 70,000 or something, so it's not just that there aren't the big number ones. A lot of other things that could have and arguably should have been higher on the list just didn't do so well this time. And you go, Walking Dead was down at rank 28 with 44,597 units. So that was one of the things that for a while was usually in the top 10.
Oh, they took a meteoric crash when the anniversary covers by Bill Sienkiewicz were done. I mean, that was... Everybody was doubling up on it because they wanted to get both covers. And some people were getting multiple of those Sienkiewicz covers. They were very, very good covers. And on top of it, people were putting sets together to sell on a secondary market. So that's really the reason why there was the big crash.
Yeah, yeah. So what else do we got here? We do have that Avengers No Road Home number one that Sam was mentioning at rank number 10 with 64,505 units. I think they were hoping to have kind of the same sort of success they had with Avengers No Surrender. The difference is there's an ongoing Avengers book, and this did outsell it because the Avengers number 14 and 15 were down at ranks 23 and 24 with 48,887 for number 14 and 48,050 units for number 15. So I would say they are having some decent success with No Road Home, at least for that first one. Then you go down to number 2, which is down at rank 41, and it was at 36,396, so not so much success there. Did any of the other issues of that land on here? I don't think so. Yeah, I'm not seeing them.
The other thing to remember, too, is with a...
Rank 45 is issue number 3.
Oh, you're right. There it is. Just stared right past it. I was looking a little further down, I guess. That's
and
it.
With these weekly books, you just got to remember that there's a lot of reorder that happens week in and week out. And
yeah.
That's, you know, I hate to say it's to be expected, but it's to be expected.
Well, I think when you've got a weekly book at $3.99, there are going to be a couple of people who get that first, sample it, and then it, you know, maybe they'll get it, maybe they won't. And it takes them a little bit to read it. And so you got to expect some delayed sales there, I think, if you're lucky.
Right.
We also do have that second issue of Daredevil, because we talked about how that first one was doing 61,566. And that second issue was down almost 42%, down to 35,763 units at rank 43 there. So definitely there were some drop-offs. But again, not particularly surprising. I think that's fairly commonplace. I do think it's worth noting that while Batman didn't get a huge benefit from that crossover story, Flash did. At rank 8, Flash number 64 was 67,712 units, which is up significantly from the 39,099 units the previous issue had sold.
Yeah, and number 65 down at rank 16 with 60,031 issues. Off, you know, 7,500 plus units from that one, but still well above the 39,000 from the previous one.
But I expect to see it kind of right back down in the 40-ish thousand level next month after that crossover.
Since we were down there for a minute, the one I do have a question on is, well, two really. Rank 27, Wonder Woman number 64. What happened there, going from under 11,000 to 35,000?
Art germ.
Okay. Same thing with 65, because the next one went up even more.
65 was either an art germ or was a return of Jenny to covers. Give me half a second.
It was another art germ
cover.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And then the other one, I'm assuming you're going to tell me the same thing because we haven't seen these numbers in decades. Yeah, no. Three couple of years. Down at rank 42, Harley Quinn number 58, up from under 10,000 to 26,400.
Yep, it was a Derek Chu cover. I believe this was the second Derek Chu cover that came out, and the first one caught fire on the secondary market.
Okay.
The same thing with Detective 998, wherever that guy was.
998 is at rank 15, and 999 is at rank 12.
Yeah, so there was a jump because Gary Frank was doing the variants on those.
Well, Detective's been kind of pushing up as it headed towards 1,000 as well.
It has, but not by that big of a leap. we had a lot of people that added it just because of the Gary Frank cover.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. And then I did have a couple others that took that had jumps. Item number 4 on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Venom number 11.
Yep. Another huge one, almost 40%.
Yeah, that one, a lot of it was related to the variant covers. There was a Dave Gibbons Watchmen homage cover, and there was one other cover. There was actually a couple of them. There was a John Tyler Christopher Skrulls cover, but what was the other big one? Give me half a second. Let me get the query right here. So the Gibbons variant was definitely a huge seller for us, and then the other one of the variants that sold well was the insert dramatic pause. I thought there was another one. All right, guess it was just the Gibbons one. But having a Watchmen homage cover definitely tripled our sales.
If we filter the list to Marvel second issues,
it's always dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. They had an average drop of 44.85%. The largest drop being on Captain Marvel number 2, which was a 69.65% drop from 123,157 to. Let's see, 37,380. So yeah, that was a pretty harsh drop. Not terribly surprising in my opinion, because I think they're really forcing that character out there. But other ones that had sharp drops were Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers: No Road Home, Daredevil, Savage Sword of Conan, Old Man Quill, Invaders, Wolverine: Long Night adaptation only had an 18.31% drop. But it also had, you know, kind of just lower sales because it was down at around 19,251 units. And below that, we also had Champions, Marvel Comics Presents, and Black Widow, all those second issues having some drops too. So, you know, again, Marvel over-promotes, I think, their first issues, and their second issues pay the price.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, too, has to do with the variants. Like we've talked about, Captain Marvel 1 was just a phenomenal book for us. There was an Adam Hughes cover, an Amanda Conner Virgin cover. There's just a lot of good covers on that book that a lot of people wanted. And, yeah, they didn't do anything for the second book, really, of anything other than maybe a standard 1 in 25, if I remember right. So just kind of the same thing that works for Marvel. And quite honestly, you know, it works in the store. It works for us. It's so I don't know what to say. We've already talked a lot about it, but it is a tactic that works.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're going to keep doing it because it works. I think to me, the main mm-hmm. takeaway is anyone who looks at a first issue sales of Marvel saying, wow, this is a successful title, they're kind of reading it wrong. It's a successful first issue. In most cases, right. The second, it's not a successful title. Or
right.
As successful.
I think where I start to see success is when issue 3 starts to creep up over issue 2 and issue 4 creeps a little bit over issue 3. You may never get back to the sales of number 1 if you've done, you know, if it's a huge book, but if you see retained and growing sales, then to me that's where you start to see a successful title. It could be down in the 30,000 range, but if after 12 issues, you know, say issue 1 was 100,000, it drops down to 30,000 by issue 3, but if you're back at issue 12, you're up to, you know, 50,000, that's a successful title. It's growing. It's gaining readers.
Yeah. I think the fourth issue is commonly a good barometer for that, because I think that's where readers have had a chance to look at it, kind of weigh in, and orders are starting to be based a little on that. It can't happen as early as number 3, but I don't know if most retailers are on the ball as you guys over at Cowabunga tend to be.
I think most of the industry for something like Immortal Hulk, it really took issue 12 to get a lot of people to start adding a little bit more and a little bit more each month. Just too many things have been happening in the book that has both the individual reader as well as the secondary market trying to get the books. So everyone has been starting to slowly add more and more of each of those issues. And that's a case also where the Marvel Unlimited 6-month delay has not hurt the store. It's actually helped us, because it's now allowing people to go back and read those first few issues, and they're starting to say, I got to get on this book right away. So they're coming into the store and picking it up, and they're trying to go back as they can, either getting second, third, fourth, fifth. I think there's going to be a sixth printing of one of the books coming out soon. But again, that's Marvel continuing to support the product sales by reprinting.
Well, and so, we've got reorder activity for Immortal Hulk numbers 2, 11, 3, and 7 downs at ranks. 286, 316, 320, and 341, respectively.
Yeah, I want to say 2 is a fourth print, and the later numbers, I think, are second prints. But, I mean, it's a book that they keep putting back in print, and we keep ordering a handful every time it's back in print, and we sell through them.
Well, if there's a demand for it, keep it out there, absolutely.
There is. I mean, it is the single hottest Marvel book right now.
Dumb question. If you look down at rank 115, Old Lady Hawkeye, you're starting to see a leveling to slight rise. Is that a book you would say the same thing is happening to, or is that a specific cover?
Old Lady Harley, not Old Lady.
Oh, you're right. That's DC. Never mind. Forget it.
Give it time. There will be an Old Lady Hawkeye if there hasn't already been.
Wait a minute, though. No, same question still applies. Is that a book you think people are finding particularly interesting, and, you know, even though it's a smaller number, they're sticking with?
No, that was the last issue of the series. Oh. It was a 5-issue mini. No, and that one, fortunately or unfortunately, fortunately in the sense that it was only 5 issues, and unfortunately it did not carry highly favorable word of mouth.
Yeah, I think I got the first issue of that, and that was around the time I was cutting back, so I think I dropped it.
Yeah, that was unfortunately a quick one.
Yeah, well, I think some of them, they're trying to cash in on what's a popular kind of almost meme or whatever these days in the comics of old lady or old man, this, that, or the other. And if they've got a great story, that's cool. I'm game for it. But so often they kind of don't.
Right. Anybody want to talk about number 9 on the list here? Uncanny X-Men 11? Up 27.8%.
That was a special oversized issue, which I think certainly factors
wasn't
in.
Wasn't that like
You betcha. It was a $7.99. That issue had one of the one of the percent-driven deep discounts for retailers, mm-hmm. and it was based on Uncanny X-Men number 4. And that was one of those, order 200% or more, and you get retailers get an extra 15% discount. Order 175% or more, you get a 10% additional discount, or 150% or more, and you get a 5% discount. So that's a lot of what drove that, and I think there might have been an extra variant or two thrown on it, so that never hurts the cause.
What's really interesting is there is no standard price on this. Issue 10 was $4.99, 11 was $7.99, and 12, which is above it at rank 7, was $3.99.
I would say that's standard pricing at Marvel.
Shoot it up in the sky and see where it lands. No, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 covers for number 11.
And did 12 get the benefit of a little bit more of a bounce from more covers? Or just, hey, enough people read 11, they actually wanted 12?
12 was kicking off a new storyline after the weekly run they'd done. And it was featuring Cyclops and Wolverine.
Yep. 12 had only two covers, an A and an open-to-order B.
Wow. And still sold, 68,000, which is very strong for a Marvel book without a ton of covers. It's not Amazing Spider-Man.
I would just say it's very strong, period.
Oh, well, true.
As Marvel has been wont to do, they put a second print of X-Men 12 out, and it came out on April 3rd with a new LaRocca cover, which is actually a quite fetching cover. So,
what would you guys say is kind of the sales level for Uncanny X-Men? Because I just did a quick chart of that title going back to roughly the beginning of 2003. And really, for most of that 2003 to 2009 period, I would say, well, really through 2008, I'd say 80,000 or above, 90,000 even for some of that first year or two. But then the thing kind of falls into that standard decline or whatever through 2008, 9, 10, and 11. Then there's some ups and downs here and there, but the general trend is down. And then after that, we start to get the relaunch with it spiking, dropping, and kind of going down and bumps up and then drops down again, and then another relaunch and that kind of a thing. But really, the last few years of the title, 2016, 17, were some of the worst sales it had, and now here, we're getting back to where it was in 2014, 2015, which is in the 50,000 to 60,000 range. I mean, to me, that's implying they're not putting the right talent on the book.
Well, but has there always been an Uncanny X-Men? Because didn't they get rid of it for a while and add some odd characters in it?
Absolutely. It was not there the whole time. It's not there for a lot of late 2017 and early 2018 and such. There are definitely some gaps in its publishing history.
I mean, I think if you have Scott and Logan, and Scott not being the bad Scott we saw there a few years ago, I think that book can sell 60,000. But there's a lot of caveats in what I just said that they haven't done much of in that time.
Well, I guess my surprise was from 2003 through end of 2008, it was selling above 80,000. Very consistently, with a few times it bounced below in early 2006.
Was that when it was? Was that just after AVX and when it was the quasi Avengers book?
You're thinking Uncanny Avengers.
Okay,
but it might have been around that time. I'm trying to remember what was happening when, and I've gotten to the point I can't remember that kind of stuff for every franchise these days.
Also, don't forget that around the time of 2009, we had the recession, and there was a lot of collectors and subscribers that got out of the hobby at that point.
Yeah, I recall being out of work for a little bit of late 2008, early 2009. So yeah, it was not a fun time. What's interesting is if you look at early 2017 first quarter, Uncanny X-Men got down to the 33,318 sales level.
Yep, but then it went away again, right? And that's when you had the red, the blue, the gold, all the colors.
Yeah, yeah. And then the colors went away and the Uncanny came back. So
like
go figure.
Keep Scott and Logan in this book. Keep it called Uncanny. I think you can sell them this level.
I think so. I think there was a period there where clearly they were not handling the property well enough based on how well it showed it could sell.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what Snyder's run on Batman has shown, is if you've got a creator that's clicking with the audience, Batman can sell really well. It's not the only title that's shown that. We've seen that over time with Spider-Man. We've seen that certainly with Avengers, X-Men, and other titles and such. I think it's just hard for them to figure out who's that right creative team at the right time, what's the right take to have on each property and stuff, and keep the stuff up there.
Yeah, certainly. Once again, what happens when you take Marvel and DC out?
Well, the store's shelves get a lot emptier. certainly, it removes a fair amount of material from the list. Unsurprisingly, the top-selling one is Walking Dead. Go figure. What does surprise me a little, although I enjoyed it, the second best-selling one was Sharky Bounty Hunter number 1 at rank 53 with 31,399 units. It surprises me because it was a fun read, don't get me wrong. I certainly don't question it on terms of quality, but for a number one like that to bounce up there, it's not like it... Well, I guess it's Mark Millar. That makes sense. I was going to say, it's, again, not like a saga, that kind of thing. There are a few others that, it's going to launch strong. I would not have pegged this one as that, and I should have.
Yeah, Mark Millar, it's... Retailers, fairly intelligent retailers who know their market will likely always order up on Millar stuff just because of the fact that it's basically, if it gets put to paper, it's almost guaranteed to be optioned. And considering he sold the Millarverse, it's already optioned.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is this? It will be kind of a talk. It is.
That being said, I remember you and James reviewed this book, and neither of you, as I remember, had particularly stellar hopes, but you both, while you each had problems with it, you both enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it was surprisingly fun. I didn't stick with it. I don't think James did. It wasn't a bad book. It felt kind of sort of like a Lobo book in some respects.
Yeah, I remember you saying that exact thing.
So I can see where there's a following for it, but again, it wasn't the sort of thing that I would have said, yeah, it's going to be, you know, one of the best, you know, non-Marvel DC books out there. Again, I had forgotten it was Mark Millar. I think if I'd remembered that, it would have I would have given it a higher expectation for that.
Next on the list, of course, Spawn still hanging in there, and obviously it'll tick up when it gets to 300.
Spawn right now is really just being buoyed by having two variant covers each month. Not to knock it, because it's still a good seller, but a lot of the uptick in the numbers and a lot of the numbers we're seeing is multiple covers that people are double dipping on.
It's nice to have those covers back.
Although these are not the homage type covers they used to do.
No.
These are just a regular cover and then a virgin cover and then a black and white sketch cover.
Yep. But they're gorgeous. And I'd still say it's the best written Spawn's been since at least the 130s, too. For those people that are still reading it, it is some of the better written Spawn in close to a decade.
I got off with issue 50.
Okay.
So I really can't comment on that, but it does seem to be ticking up in sales as to how much that's the covers, how much of that people are enjoying it more. I really couldn't say.
Next, of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. While this isn't on this list and won't be for... Eric, what do you have to say about that Angel announcement?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Because I don't think maybe I saw the Angel announcement.
It's a surprise release. It's coming out, I guess, next week.
Oh, yeah.
Surprise! Yeah,
and I am surprised. We've never seen huge sales for Firefly, any of that stuff, or Buffy. It's just these products aren't ones that really land hard for us. And I think it's just our market. Our market's not really geared to that. We're kind of a bad case for some of these books.
Interesting. And that makes sense, because I think every shop has aspects of its demographic and stuff and the taste of the customers that make it unique.
Right. And John, you walked around our store, so you saw a lot of things. You probably noticed that we had a fair amount of things like Alien. We had a lot of Xenomorphs and stuff like that around. So we do better with the Alien books coming from Dark Horse than we do some of the other properties licensed through Boom and even IDW.
Yeah, I can see that. I think there's some properties that are going to work better at, say, a store right on the edge of a major college campus or something like that. others that are going to do better again in kind of your sort of area, others that, you know, deep in a downtown major metropolis kind of a thing, you know, a New York and LA kind of a Chicago area might do better there or something. There's just different makeups of the people and stuff.
Right, right.
But fortunately, there's something for everybody out there, so I think that's a good thing. But it's interesting. You look at the top of the list, you've got some of the expected things that are just strong, you know, creator-owned slash indie, however you want to phrase it, properties of Walking Dead and Spawn and whatnot. You've got licensed properties like Buffy, Firefly. You could argue where Sharky Bounty Hunter and Magic Order fall into, since they would have been creator-owned, but now they're corporate-owned, but yeah, whatever. And then Oblivion Song goes in the same category as Walking Dead because it's a Kirkman kind of a thing.
Well, I mean, you guys talked about it before, and I think it bears, I don't want to say repeating, but, you know, will Kirkman ever have another Walking Dead? His books sell okay, but nothing sells close to what Walking Dead has.
I'm not going to say he's never going to have another major hit like that. I wouldn't bet against the man that way, because I think that's foolish, but I think it's going to be an uphill battle. I think he's had, I'm going to say, almost a dozen properties out there that had the chance. I'm not going to say they had necessarily the potential, but between Invincible, Astounding Wolfman, Brit, Guarding the Globe, Outcast, Oblivion Song, and I'm trying to think what else he's done over the intervening years, plus all the stuff he was doing over at Marvel or whatnot, he's had the chance for another title he did to become kind of that breakout hit.
But to be fair, in the last 20 years, he has the only breakout hit.
I don't agree with that. I think you can look at things like Saga.
You keep saying that, but every time it shows up on the list, it's still down in the 50s, sometimes closer to 100.
Yeah, it's single issues, but the trades are like printing money.
Well, that's okay, but that's a different thing.
And, well, hold on, though. And to furthermore, to back it up, Saga is not a TV show or a movie.
Okay.
So the sales that it's doing are phenomenal, and there's no big media push to back it up. With Walking Dead, you've got how many seasons of the TV show, and then you've got the After the Dead or whatever it is. I mean, it's got every possible angle for promotion you could get. You go to Comic-Con, and there's usually always a Walking Dead fixture that's, you know, multiple booths large, or it's at an off-site location. I think they did a Walking Dead event at the Dodgers ballpark, not the Dodgers, the Padres ballpark or something. I mean, it's the amount of publicity that Walking Dead gets compared to a property like Saga, but Saga still sells so well. I would have to side with John and say that it's not the only breakout hit of the last couple of decades.
And I do feel obligated to point out, I was going to say that Saga actually outsold Walking Dead 1 month, but it turns out that's not the case. It had two issues come out, and in aggregate, it outsold it, but yeah, okay, never mind.
We'll take it for the win.
What's it averaging at, though, John?
That's a great question. I would say,
like, the last five. What are the last five issues? What's their sales?
The last five are around 40,000.
Yeah, I mean, so again, you're talking somewhere just above the top 50. I mean, is it good? Yes. But again, The Walking Dead, while it's certainly not there anymore, there was a period it was in the top 10. We were talking, is it, other than Batman, the only permanent fixture in the top? I mean, Saga hasn't gotten close to that level yet. And yes, it doesn't have, you know, whatever publicity. It doesn't have those things, but something that, you know, 40,000 people are reading is hard to call a breakout hit.
Saga's that weird thing, though, where people wait for the trades and the hardcovers. It seems weird.
Okay, but that's
weird.
A different thing.
It's not, because it still sales, and it still adds up, and it still is a volume that surpasses most every other book.
I get Sam's point that there are not many things that are selling as high as Walking Dead is on the monthly side. I get that.
Wait a minute. Okay. Do you see that? You're a comic book reseller.
Yep.
Do you make as much from Saga as kind of all the top 50 Marvel and DC books?
I would say we make more from Saga than all but maybe five DC titles. And probably more than Let's see, Marvel's is such a weird beast because of all the variants and stuff that they play on issue ones. If you were to look at ongoing Marvel titles, Saga's right up there with a good half of them.
Okay.
And what I was going to say is we keep more Walking Dead on our shelf because when there was a big Walking Dead sale, we bought in quite a bit because we got a substantial discount. We restock our Saga trades a lot more frequently.
Okay. Again, but that, okay, but that, okay. But again, do those numbers overall, single issues and trades combined, again, Saga, you know, Justice League, Wonder Woman, Flash, Superman, Batman, Detective Comics, month in, month out, two issues, plus a few trades here and there. Do you really think Saga comes close to that profit for you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We sell more Saga trades than we do DC trades combined, predominantly.
If you look over on the trade side just for a minute, you've got 6,798 units for Saga this month across the nine trades that are out.
I'm not disagreeing with that. But my question to you was, Eric, do you make more from that one trade a year than you make from those, you know, 15 issues of Superman, 15 issues of Action, 15 issues of Batman, 15 issues of Detective, 15 issues of Iron Man, plus what ancillary, even if they're smaller numbers of trades of those same titles?
I make, if you're taking title line by title line, Iron Man compared to Saga, you know, Thor compared to Saga, I make more with Saga over the course of a year than I
really?
Do.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it always sells. That is a book that people who are not comic readers that set foot into a comic shop and say, I want to read something, I want to try something, that is inevitably what almost all of them go to.
Okay. Fair enough. Like I said, during the single issues, I have never seen it. I don't think Saga's ever broken the top 30.
I think it sells lower on the monthly side, certainly, but the fact that it is an evergreen even after it's gone on hiatus for a while, and Walking Dead, which was at one point an evergreen, no longer really is on the trade side. Certainly it's doing really well on the individual issue side, even though it is cooling off substantially from where it was even a year or so ago, to the point it's selling maybe not quite more than half what it was selling a year ago, but noticeably down. I wouldn't say it was the only breakout hit. It's certainly the poster child of breakout hits.
It's definitely the number one media machine, I think, that has come out as a new concept, a new title. There's no questioning that. The amount of money Kirkman's made, the amount of different packagings that he's done with the different compilations and trade, hardcover, compendium, and all of that. He created a new market, essentially. There's no questioning that. But I would just say that there are other things out there that have done substantially well, maybe not as good as Walking Dead, but would, to me, constitute being a breakout hit.
What's interesting is Walking Dead, certainly a huge phenomenon and a new property that landed in the early 2000s and became huge. Everybody knows of it. Another prior one to that I would think of that had that level of kind of cultural impact would be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the question is, you know, how long are these between kind of things? Is it, you know, every 20-year-ish kind of a deal, in which case are we due for the next kind of big hit in the next, you know, few years? I don't know. I mean, the thing is, there's nothing inherently stopping any property getting published at any point from catching on like that, other than most don't.
Mm-hmm.
And by most, I mean like 99.99% of them don't. It just doesn't happen that way.
And I think between Walking Dead and Turtles, I mean, look at all the original Image books. I mean, we were just talking about Spawn. Spawn basically is selling where Saga tends to sell. And it's 290-some issues as opposed to what Saga had, 50?
Thought it was a little higher. I thought I was thinking 62 for some reason, but I honestly don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, but
I was thinking 54.
54, nine trades worth. That's right.
Okay, but you're still talking a fifth. Or not even, yeah, a fifth.
Spawn, about a sixth.
About a sixth, exactly. Well, yeah, somewhere in between, you know. So, and again, look at those numbers for, you know, all those Image, those original titles. You know, look at what they did their first 20 issues compared to those, you know.
So. You cannot compare original Image titles' first 20 issues to anything in the current market. It was just such a different situation then.
Yeah, well.
I mean, these guys were literally causing riots at San Diego Comic-Con when they were throwing out gold covers and stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, I remember.
And frankly, I'm kind of glad those days are behind us, because I think that was a level of collectability and whatnot that was really not good for the industry. The interest in the popularity, okay, that's fine, and it's great, actually, but when people are at risk of literally trampling other people just to get a comic, I mean, something's not right there.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, it's interesting. Saga is drawn by who?
Fiona Staples.
Oh! It's Brian K. Vaughan, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
What is the book he is doing with Mr. Chang?
Paper Girls.
The only reason I know this is two of them were literally at my local shop signing on Saturday, and I thought it had to do with Saga, but apparently it didn't.
Nope, that was Paper Girls.
Fair enough. They had a crowd, but it wasn't. Having been there when they were there, it wasn't much larger than your average Wednesday at noon.
Yeah, I think the size crowd you get depends on, you know, the venue and the if you can get the right people there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, just looking over this list of non-Marvel DC books, again, a lot of it falls into those clear categories of property taken from somewhere else. You know, Fight Club 3, Rick and Morty, the Power Rangers stuff, you know, Star Trek, etc. Things that have gotten big enough to become, you know, something that goes elsewhere, of which there are fewer, and then a couple of creator-owned things. It's funny, because some of the stuff I'm going to say is a licensed title here is like the Marvel Action Avengers, because when IDW's doing it, it is licensed.
Well, it's funny, looking at like the top, I don't know, what is this? Call this 20.
Mm-hmm.
Everything on here is licensed, Robert Kirkman, Mark Millar, and Spawn.
Unnatural does not fit that.
Okay. Where is that one?
That is...
Oh, okay, yeah, that's like 17 out of those 20.
Yeah, I figured I'd start at the bottom. I had better odds. But yeah, I would say overall, most of them, other than Die, kind of sort of fall into that category. Yeah.
Is Die not Robert Kirkman?
Definitely not.
Karen Gillan.
I thought Robert Kirkman just did that Die book. Isn't that?
That's Die, Die, Die.
Sorry. Okay.
This is just the singular Die.
Okay.
Yeah, Karen Gillan and Stephanie Hans.
Fair enough.
Can we play a game?
Sure.
Will line 196 make it to issue 3? It's an Image comic.
Rank 196.
Rank 196, yeah, sorry, roll 198.
Vindication number 1 at 6,770 units. This is by...
M.D. Marie.
Yeah, miniseries premiere in, let's see, in turbulent times when cops are often portrayed as the enemy, the people, Detective Chip Christopher maneuvers the blurred blue line between racism and due diligence in order to do his job. And right now his job is to investigate Turn, a young black man with a sketchy past who was previously exonerated of a similar murder. It might make it to 3. I doubt it would make it to 4.
Not a good leadoff of 6,700. And I think this is a case of too much coming out personally. I think the story sounds like it could have an interesting premise, but with everything else on the racks, it's just too much.
Yeah.
And there's no real racial tension in it, but... you've got Criminal coming out from Image, which is kind of that street beat sort of feel. And I think people are going to more likely go for Ed Brubaker before they go for M.D. Marie. Just a guess.
Yeah.
Actually, it's more than a guess. It's reality because that's how sales panned out for us.
Well, I think part of it in this area, when you don't have that shared universe aspect of Marvel and DC, and there's just so much stuff out there, and a lot of this stuff, if we take Image out, I think the odds of success for a lot of these titles is either it's already doing okay for itself and it's fine, or if it's new, it's going to have a hard time just because so little of those things get into the average store, I think.
When you take Image out, it's almost exclusively licensed or one or two, you know, other things.
Right.
Certainly it gets to be a bit shorter of a list. I'm scanning down, and Umbrella Academy is the first non-licensed thing I see.
Well, it's not licensed, but it is a TV property, a Netflix show.
Well, it is now, but it started as a comic.
Right.
So that's one that went comic elsewhere. Black Hammer Age of Doom falls into original the comic material.
You probably got two up from that. Rank 153, Marvel Action Avengers.
Licensed property. It's IDW doing a Marvel book.
Yeah, I guess I don't know if that to me screams of licensing as much as, you know, like a Hasbro type thing.
Whatever. It's not an original IDW or creator-owned property.
Fine, it's a gray area.
Black Hammer, though, I'll give you.
Yes, exactly.
Marvel Action Avengers was something that you look at it and you didn't necessarily realize, other than the IDW logo, it was published by them and not Marvel. It's a kid's book that's clearly a licensed sort of a thing.
Hellboy is kind of the next one. You know what? For all the talk we had about breakout hits, Hellboy is another one that you could argue with a third movie coming out here in a few weeks. You could argue is another semi-breakout hit.
I don't know if I'd use the term breakout hit, but I think you're onto something there. There are certain properties that are time-tested and successful, even if they're not burning up the charts.
Yeah.
And I think Hellboy absolutely fits in that category. That thing's been around, what, 20, 25 years?
Yeah.
I think the anniversary Hellboy Day was just passed.
So, I mean, I would put Hellboy, Usagi Yojimbo, Turtles and stuff into that kind of a category of... Again, maybe not that breakout hit along the lines of just shooting up the charts and, oh my god, they sell amazingly, but I'd also probably put Atomic Robo in there. These things have a track record, they've got a pedigree, they're gonna continue to come out unless the creators just get bored and tired of it or something.
Well, if we're going that far to Atomic Robo, Lady Death's gotta fit in there too.
I would say Lady Death, I would say Lady Mechanica.
Yeah.
So one that's kind of interesting to me here is Rank 201. From Dark Horse, Girl in the Bay, number one, only debuting with 6,500 issues or copies sold. I expected this one to sell better. Dark Horse is kind of rolling out a new order 10 or more on the item. The title is fully returnable. And then on top of it, having James DeMatteis as the writer, who is held in very high regard by most everyone that comes into our store. We did pretty well on issue one. Issue two took a big hit, but... That one surprised me. I would have thought that would have been over the 10,000 mark, personally.
I would not, but I frankly kind of am surprised when anything kind of not by Marvel and DC, and frankly, many things from Marvel and DC, are over 10,000.
Yeah. I love J.M. DeMatteis, but that being said, I'd read anything he did back on his classic properties. I don't know if I need a new creator.
Well, you guys were talking about Lady Death. Did you guys throw Strangers in Paradise in there?
And that's another one that I would add. Anything by Terry Moore would fall into that category.
No, exactly. And the Hernandez brothers, too. I don't know if they're still coming out, but same thing.
When the Luna brothers were working together, I would have put them in that category, too. I think there's certain creators that, even if their property is new, they've got kind of that track record that their property's kind of, you know, grandfather into.
Yeah, I was going to say, is Love and Rockets still a thing?
Not sure. Never got into it myself.
Didn't they go to trades with Fantagraphics or something? I think they are doing them, but I think they're trade-ish.
Let's see here. They've gone to a Love and Rockets magazine.
There you go. Okay.
Which is what they always were. The last one came out November 21st.
Okay.
It was number 6.
And is that Fantagraphics that's publishing them?
Si, senor. Sorry, yes. I guess I shouldn't throw random languages in there.
I got you.
Especially when I'm not fully fluent in them.
I was so tempted to say hi, which is yes in Japanese, but I figured, no, that would just prove your point.
What else got in here?
I see a Turok number 2 in here. Here's a dumb question. At that point, is that licensed, or is that...
My understanding is it's still licensed from the Gold Key stuff.
Okay.
But that's one of those properties that it seems like people keep trying to get out there. And ooh, I think a lot of it is it did really well, as did the other stuff over at Valiant back in the 90s. People are thinking maybe we can kind of, you know, catch that lightning in the bottle again.
And Ron Mars is writing this one. I might have to track that down.
I read a Turok issue. I'm trying to remember if it was this or maybe it was the last go-round somebody did. Probably the last go-round. And it wasn't bad. It just wasn't something I felt I needed to keep getting.
Yeah.
But man, you get to where we're below the top 300, and we've got things like Atomic Robo at 346, which I think is a fun series, 1,705 units for one of them, and then another issue above it at 330 with 1,910 units. You know, there are a couple of these things that I'm hoping these people are doing well and stuff, but I'd like to see some of these things sell better, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Another one that I haven't read, but I'm gonna go ahead and shout out, because I like the artist, Grumble from Albatross Funny Books at rank 354. Mike Norton's the artist, so his stuff's always worth checking out.
Wow. I always forget what's down here.
The top 300, the bottom of that was 2,687 units. Obviously, we had 200 items below that. If we filter it again, staying with just the non-Marvel DC non-image, we've only got 93 items there.
Hey, John, can you go back in the archives and look at the sales trend for Lumberjanes over its 59 issues and just kind of see if it has had just a continuing decline or if it's kind of leveled off?
Okay, just the Lumberjanes series itself or the various...
Yep.
Okay.
Just the main
series. I was
going to
say there's a few other things.
The one that's at rank 301 this month.
See, yes, that's the one.
Okay, it started at 15,796 on the first issue in April 2014. Then it went to 9,904 units, dipped a little further down on the next issue to 9,150. Then it stayed right around 10,000 units for the next four issues. I mean, with that sixth one being at like 99.99. And then it pretty much started a gradual decline until it got to 2,756 units in January. So I would say, for the most part, a pretty steady decline, with early 2015 kind of sort of being a little levelish, but certainly from September 2015 down, with a bump in May of 2018, it was a downward trend.
Okay. Yeah, that's one that sells far better in trades than it does as single issues.
Yeah, I think some titles, the audience just gravitates more towards the trades and stuff. I think they get a better reading experience out of that.
Well, that's a kid's property kind of, isn't it?
It is. It's more of a kid's property, and those tend to sell better in trade than they do single issue, because
yep.
Parents are more likely to spend $14.99 or $16.99, you know, on 180 pages versus $3.99 on 20.
How much of it do you think the kids would rather have the full reading experience than piecemeal over a longer time?
I don't know as if they really understand what a full reading experience means, to be real honest. I think for them, it may be more enticing to have a thicker volume because it's like I have more. You know, you have a stack of baseball cards. It's better to have, at a certain age, it's better to have 10 baseball cards than one Michael Jordan rookie card kind of thing, because 10 is bigger than one.
I agree with that. I just wonder if it's better to have a bigger story that's complete versus it's getting piecemealed to you and feels...
Well, here's the other thing, because I buy my daughter the DC Superhero Girls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if they make single issues, but I buy them in trades.
No, they're digital first, and then they go to the trade packaging.
Fair enough.
The digest or whatever, yeah.
I don't buy them digitally. As a parent of a child under 10... The one or two single issues we've given my children just end up in pieces and pages all over their room. Books are a little more durable, or trades are a little more durable, which is the number one reason. Even if that book was coming out in single issues, I probably wouldn't buy it that way.
I understand that. Agreed.
Well, and it's funny you guys mentioned that, both in terms of the physical durability, but also that the trade format seems to work better for that kind of material. When I was at C2E2, I went to the Action Lab booth, noticed they had a bunch of the Miraculous Ladybug and Cat Noir stuff, and I'm like, are you guys still doing this comic? It stopped coming out at some point, and I see you got trades. Is it just straight to trade? Oh, no, it's still coming out the comic. I'm like, are you sure? And the lady goes, asks the person who frankly knew better, and says, oh, it came back. Oh, no, it has gone just directly to trade. If they'd messaged that, maybe I'd have gotten on board on those trades.
That being said, I buy those as well. Again, my daughter found that on Netflix at some point and loves it, and she has a stack of those as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a great property. I think it's a surprising amount of fun. So they're, I think, on their third season of that show.
Yep.
And these comics are taking that computer animated show, using the art from it as panels, but as comic book panels. So not just a grid format. They actually, you know, make it work as a regular comic would, toss in the word balloons, and it works surprisingly well as a comic. And is faithful, obviously, to the TV show, which is an added bonus. So, kind of nice. So what else looked interesting on the list for you guys? I'm trying to take a look down here at the bottom end of the list, seeing what I'm getting that jumps out at me. And frankly, it's not a whole lot because I've really cut back on the non-Marvel DC kind of stuff I'm getting these days, or non-premiere, I should say. Other than things like Atomic Robo, which is technically a premier publisher because it's IDW, there's a lot less from the back half I'm kind of getting these days.
Dumb question. Rank 324. Valiant Entertainment, Wrath of the Eternal Warriors, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a launch of a new title with a dollar first issue at 1,986 units, or is that a $1 reprint of something?
It's a $1 reprint.
Okay, fair enough.
This is why I put the solicitation blurb in the spreadsheet, because otherwise it's like, I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah,
it's... Reprinting Wrath of the...
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's smart for them to do some reprints and stuff, I think. I don't think they've got a big enough library that they should do too many of that. I mean, Valiant's one of those companies that, man, they do some great comics, but the pacing and the delays kind of between volumes of some of their properties is really what kind of frustrated me a bit. I mean, they know how to tell stories, they've got great production values, they've got great talented creators, fun characters, but when they would park a property for a year or so before getting back to it, it just kind of broke the story momentum for me.
Silencer's ending finally, right?
Yes, I believe so, from DC.
Because it and Damage are both down here at ranks 171 and 178 in the 9100 and 8300 range.
Damage, I think its last issue is going to be maybe 16.
Okay.
And I'm not sure about Silencer, but it's interesting that they're winding that down, I believe, as the Leviathan story is really ramping up, because it's been a major part of that key aspect of that title since the beginning. But those are the last of the New Age of Hero books out there, because Sideways, I think, did end with that issue at rank 165 there at 9,625 units.
Wow. This can't be right. Rank 200, Dazzler number one. That's a new number one for Dazzler, right?
I thought it was a one-shot.
I think that's, yeah.
Still, that's a one-shot for Dazzler at 6,600. Wow.
Actually, it's a reprint.
It's a reprint of the original Dazzler one.
Oh, okay. At $4. Wow.
That would be one of those facsimiles.
Such a deal they
have
for you. Yeah. Well, who knows what a facsimile is these days? I mean, come on. Kids don't know what faxes are.
We don't have a facsimile machine.
Oh, the other New Age of Hero one that ended was Curse of Brimstone. And number 11 is there at 188. And I think 12 was the final issue, which I am not seeing at the moment. Let me see if filtering the list helps any. Nope, it's going to show up next time. So... I wish I had the data for kind of the banner or not imprint, but whatever marketing thing that all the titles kind of launched out of, because it would be interesting to see, you know, how long those initiatives last. And I'm sure I could go, you know, put in the data and do some of that myself, but it'd take too long to dig it up and put that in. I'm way too lazy for that. Too busy, actually, but still. Hey, there's a lot of stuff that's doing okay, but... You know, there's a lot of titles that are coming out, and, you know, again, the majority of this list is under 20,000 units. We're under 20,000, actually, by rank 84 this time. And it's not like I expect these things to just be selling gangbusters, but I'm uncertain if they were to do fewer titles, if the existing titles would sell better, or if it's just the cost of content creation has gotten to the point that, you know, the big names that would necessarily, you know, boost the sales or whatever, just it's not cost effective to get them on the books. I'm just not sure on that.
Yeah.
So anything else look exciting, or just talk about the price points real quick and
yeah, let's do that.
All right, price points. $399 is dominating with 84% of the units in the top 300. Add in the stuff that is below that, and we're accounting for almost 90%, with 89.67%. You know, expand that to the top 500, and that is 87.17% at $399 or less. Heck, if you expand that by a penny to $4, it's 87.37%. So still, nearly 90% of the stuff is kind of that standard price point or below. There are a couple of things above it.
I was going to say, it's the below, though. There are, in the top 300, there are 17 items below $3.99. And the majority of those are the 10 $1 reprints.
Yeah.
There are 31 items above it, including 25 $4.99.
Frankly, it doesn't surprise me too much. Anytime you've got an oversized issue or an annual or something like that, it's going to be at least $4.99, $5.99.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you do kind of a double issue, which we're seeing, or triple issue, we're seeing more and more of those, that's the $7.99 or $9.99 price points. And yeah, we're going to have a couple of those every month, but really, you know, having six items at $5.99, $7.99, or $9.99 in the top 300, that's not too bad.
Yeah. Again, I'm just pointing out there's more things above $3.99 than there are below.
Yeah. But I think we're at a point where the market is generally leaning towards the less expensive than the more expensive. It's I think more obvious on the trade side, where the majority of stuff is $20 or below. And I think it's good to have the occasional thing that's the bigger release, the bigger issue, but to do so sparingly. So yeah, that's pretty much what it looked like this time. Again, overall sales were down, you know, substantially this month. Like I said, it was the eight months were lower than this, but really, I guess it was the ninth lowest month. But it's the lowest one we've had since May 2011. And, you know, I hope it's just, yeah, it's a weak first quarter as standard, and we start to see stuff, you know, bump up after this. The question is, how much is that going to be because next month of, you know, Detective 1000 and stuff like that versus just more sustainable, better sales?
That being said, you reviewed it. People I've talked to locally, the Slack channel has weighed in. Not a lot of people thrilled with Detective 1000.
I was certainly not thrilled with it. There was one story I thought was brilliant, the precedent. Most of the rest, man, they just couldn't land the ending.
Yeah. And it was an odd duck for... It was an odd issue, period. It felt like an annual, is really what it felt like.
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
And not like a good annual.
Yeah, true. The part that really depressed me a little was the ending on the Arkham Knight tease, because it's like, yeah, I really don't care that much about that character.
Yes. You
know, if your 1000 issue anniversary is to say, you know what, there's this character created for the video game, we're gonna go look at that. It seems like an odd thing, but if it works for him, it works for him. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Yeah, do it for me, Eric.
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ask Logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.